Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everyone. We're so thrilled to have Brett Tabke here, the founder and creator of PubCon. Welcome, Brett.
Thank you for having me on, Seth. I appreciate it.
Well, first, before we talk about PubCon, we have some exciting PubCon news to disclose. It sounds like, drum roll, that we may, in fact, be able to meet in person once again. What is the great news?
Yeah, first week of August, we are going to have our long-lost Florida conference that was scheduled last year that we had to postpone 3 weeks before the conference because of COVID. So we are good to go the first week of August, 3, 4, and 5.
That's so awesome.
So it'll be so excited.
So it's going to be the a day of trainings and then 2 days of sessions.
Yes. And it looks like we're going to have everybody back. We put out the call to speakers and everybody is excited about it now. And now emails today and yesterday, people, when are you going to have it? When are you going to have it? So clearly there's pent up demand to get back together. No,
people are so excited. A lot of people double vaccinated. The first big conference in the legal space is coming in May. And I will see. It's in Miami. I'm excited. Right. Been conference I've been really going to for over a decade or for a decade. And it's very, very excited to see that in play. But you know, August, you should have a lot more certainty in the world than May.
Yep. That's kind of what we thought. You know, we could have pulled the trigger and had it in May or June. And, you know, fortunately I'm married to a doctor of nursing and she, you know, you might want to wait just a little bit. So we decided to go ahead and wait until first part of summer there, middle
that's
of summer.
Awesome.
So
that's awesome. Well, look, for a lot of people watching, they're regulars at PubCon. For some of our viewers, they're not, they sort of, they geek out from afar. Talk to us, tell us how the history of PubCon. I love the story. Just how did this sort of crazy idea turn into something that is a must attend amongst us geeks?
You know, we started out, this is our 20th anniversary, 20 years, 2001, a bunch of guys off our forum site, Webmaster World, got together in London just to talk about SEO because nobody was talking about this stuff back then. We had no idea. You know, we were still talking about search engines like Alta Vista, Inktomi, Yahoo. Microsoft was actually pretty popular back then. So we got together in a bar in London and somebody said, it's a conference. And they said, no, it's a pub conference. And so pub conference stuck. And that's where the name comes from, is PubCon. And every time we had one since then, we tried to do something a little more, a little better. So we started having sessions at the third one. We had Matt Cutts there in Boston. And then we started having them spring and fall ever since. And we're up somewhere between 30 and 35,000 total attendees over the years. So
when did you get yourself to Vegas?
2006, I believe, in the fall was our first one there. It just so happened I went out to look at space late in August, maybe even early September. And I said, hey, you got any space? And they said, funny you should mention that. A little conference called Comdex just canceled on us the second week of November. And so we took the old Comdex slot and they made us a deal we couldn't refuse. So we jumped in 3 months, we put on our first Vegas conference. It was just amazing.
That's awesome. There is definitely something special and unique about the conference. What do you think it is that's kept it fresh and sort of full of energy over the years? You know, there are plenty of conferences in the space, but there seems to be something about this one that has held people's attention.
You know, we attract the real practitioners of the craft, not just the marketers who are coming in to make money, coming in to, you know, sample it and move on. We have the practitioners. We got guys, everybody from folks down on turning wrenches on websites to executives who make decisions at big SEO agencies. So we've got this big, broad audience. We started out with just the guys turning wrenches on websites, just the affiliates and the mom and pops. And over the years, it became clear we needed to attract the agencies. So we started that. And then we started having these search awards every year. And that brought in the agency crowd because Lord knows agencies love to win awards. So in fact, I got one on my shelf back there.
So. It's amazing. I got a Facebook notice. Hey, you won an award today. You're top 10 for this. And it's like, yeah, it's kind of cool. Like as an agency, you know, you work hard every day. You put your head down. You know, you're doing right by clients. But when somebody else outside notices, it's kind of cool.
But we've got that core group of folks who just love hanging out and talking and learn, and they know you got to get together to learn some of this stuff because, you know, our relationship with Google websites and Google, it is adversarial. We try to say, oh, we're partners and all this, and, you know, AdWords, we'll buy it, and we're on this great partnership, but baloney. It's still adversarial, and the guys know.
But that's one of those things that when you did have much more Google representation from the search side, which was great in one sense. It always seemed very odd, like they were coming and sprinkling sort of like almost like a biblical scholar would give you some hints of what's out there and you have to connect the dots. So in one sense, it was awesome because it was primary source and nobody else was giving it to you. But there was a, to me, it always struck me as like, here is your overlord coming to talk to you, which is exactly what it is. But did you ever have those moments where you're like, this is awesome that we have it, but this is insane. This is how the information is being disseminated.
Exactly. And then they go and sit at the bar and listen to all the inside stories after a few drinks themselves. And, you know, Matt Cutts, he used to always say, I come to PubCon to listen, not to talk, to listen. Talking is my entrance fee to get into the conference. I come to listen, to hear what you guys have to say and what we're doing wrong, what we're doing right. They get to do thousands upon thousands of dollars worth of market research by coming to these conferences. So it's definitely,
you should have a special, you know, you get them there and they're the VIPs because you like it. At the same time, in a perfect world, they would be paying a super premium, 100x, because of what they're able to get from market research during those first few days there.
Exactly. And the relationships they build, you know, we regularly have people on our exhibit hall floor that do seven-figure contract sales at our conference. What's Google doing? You know, are they doing 8, 9, 10? You know, some of these guys are spending 50, 60,000 a day just on one client. And I know they got a dozen clients. So what's Google making at these conferences?
No, absolutely. Well, it's why they send people. But that was the other thing that I thought that differentiated this conference from others, was the fact that, you know, many conferences, I distinctly remember this. I went to New York for another brand in the space. And I, you know, it was very good. It was sort of a road show of the advanced track from one of their other, you know, sessions. But like at the end of the day, the end of the thing, everybody's gone. Now I'm sure the inside baseball people would have a place that they went and met up at. And right. But the idea at PubCon, that look, there's official events that everybody goes to, and I watching you from the stage at these, but then afterwards being at some really bad Mexican places and being next to people, the interactions at those events are as valuable as anything and seem still unique to the people that are going to your conference compared to others, that there is a after hours component, not ticketed, not part of the ethos of the daytime. But, and again, there are events at night, but even beyond those that seem to be part of that learning, exploring and networking that I think really has set it apart.
Yeah. The networking, sitting at the bar, like we've done for 20 years, talking shop and learning, you know, the last PubCon in Vegas, somebody from Google whispered to me, hey, we're going to start this thing called Discovery. You want to have a look at it before I launch it? I said, sure. So had a look at it, and we started talking with some people behind the scenes. And as soon as it launched, it became so apparent how much traffic this thing had, how much it could generate, Google Discover. So our guys were ready to go with this from the day one. And it's just generating insane amounts of page views for these folks. So staying in the loop, it's everything in this business.
You know, one of those things that, you know, you've also done is the sort of intro days, which again, not unique, but you seem to have figured out a formula where, whether it's an intro track, whether, you know, different interest tracks leading into the conference itself. Tell me a little bit about how those have come about. Cause I find those to be what I have noticed, right? As I got into it, you know, I was an early lawyer who came and geeked out, started the intro days, went to the main sessions. I now watch other people that I know who are, let's say, call them lay people that are not advanced SEO people that have their teams or outsourced agencies like our own that love coming to PubCon. But those days really seem like a great platform for people that don't know where to start.
Right. Well, you know, one thing we learned from the pandemic is how much information is available online. And there really is a lot of information about SEO online. So we don't try to start with the bare bones stuff because, you know,
people already know that.
They can read and they can come to the SEO, the training tracks and jump right into a step-by-step. Okay, here, we're going to take you on this path of a campaign. Here's how you're going to launch it. Here's how you're going to find your keywords. Here's how it's going to mature. Here's how you read your analytics to go adjust it again. We really want to bring people into that. We don't want to bring them in from new user standpoint because they're just aren't new users anymore. There's folks coming out of college and they're what we would call advanced SEOs 10 years ago. So we try to give it big and broad. And one of the criticisms we always had, probably the last 5 years, I've heard it repeatedly, is that we have so many speakers that are repeat speakers. And I go, you know, we've got speakers who've been doing this stuff for 20 years, and what was working 20 years ago is still working today. The basics are still the basics. Absolutely. They're still applicable. So yeah, we're going to have that guy back that knows how to do this stuff and stays current. So we have
it cuts both ways, right? I mean, the question is, are they, and like every industry, I could take law. There are some people that end up on a top 100 list locally that are way past their prime, haven't had it, are not the people you'd want to go to if you were really in trouble or needed help. Right. And yet the name is still out there. And that's sort of my question to you. How do you vet? Because you seem to do a pretty good job. Look, there's always politics and inside baseball and this and that, but with every organization, you're not unique. This is right. any from a fraternity to a nonprofit, they all have their mishigas, so to speak. But one of the things that I think that is particularly difficult is figuring out where the goods are still being delivered and who's sort of like resting on laurels and figuring that out. How do you go through that's always, as a vetting process, do you have like an inner core? You have Joe and others that I know that, but how do you sort of figure out how to sort of curate or fine tune? Because there are times when once you get a name, it's some people, like you see in every industry, there are names and then there are names with the goods. And just curious how you guys vet that.
You know, it comes down several channels. One of the things we do right after a conference is we survey the speakers and find out, hey, what'd you think of this new person? Did they really bring what we wanted to have them talk about? So we lean on the speakers start first. They're great at vetting. When we make a mistake, say, hey, don't have this guy back. Don't have this girl back, woman back. So that's number one. We make sure we follow up so that we get the problems out before they become long-term problems. Number two, we look at pedigree coming in the door. Do they work for a major corporation? Is this person working for IBM or are they working for Fast Eddie's marketing service down the street? So we look at that and then we look at their history. People with agencies, we look how big their agencies, who spoke for them. Almost everybody knows somebody in this business before they come to us, before they put their name in to speak. And we're like, hey, what's going on in Facebook? Are you involved in these groups? Are you involved with these people? So we do. We look quite a bit and we ask around and people know. People know.
Well, and then as an ongoing, so then they're there. And again, for those that have not been, this is right. a huge operation. Right. You have panels and panels and days. Right. There's no way that you could have your ear to each of these panels. And again, using the speakers is brilliant because it's almost like a vetted group of people yeah. that you have.
Right.
I don't know how to sort of without, have there been moments where you've gotten people, you've taken a shot, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And have there been any moments where somebody who comes in with pedigree from a Fortune 500 company, you're like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, definitely. We've had a few that like, how did they get that position? They just didn't bring it. And then we've had a few, like you say, older folks who are past their prime, their best days are behind them. We've had a couple of people come in and just give off the wall talks. And we're like, yeah, okay, yeah, next time you're going to have to bring back your A game. So yeah, we do look at it. And surprisingly, we look at all the decks. I look at every single deck from every PubCon. That might be 150 decks, but I try to look at every slide at every deck. Now, some people I don't need to look at Bill Hunt's. I know Bill Hunt is going to be a number one stuff or Eric Inge, but I do look at all the decks and I especially look at all the decks. So anybody who I might have a question about real close. So,
well, I'm going to pivot this from sort of the event itself. You know, I have one more question there. You know, what have you learned as far as the conference planning, right? I've noticed that over the years, you've never done a sort of conference hotel with a special locked in rate. You've kept it very disassociated where you have the conference and there's a place, hey, you want to meet up here, but you've taken out some of the risk in doing this. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what you've learned over the years and some of the things that you think of, because I think part of it is what allows it not just to be a 1-2 year thing, but you've had a pretty solid run here.
Well, you know, one thing we noticed in Vegas, there are certain hotels where a well-established conference will go through it 1 year, 2 years, and then they're done. And like, well, how come you're not coming back another year? How come you're running off to San Francisco or New York or something? And it became very apparent there definitely is relationship issues with these hotels, being able to contract with them. They're used to, in Vegas especially, they're used to working with big corporations. You know, you go into the Wynn, they just had a conference there for Wells Fargo, you know, right. Multi-million dollar conference. And here comes a little marketing conference with 1,000 people. To them, that's hardly a snack. So sometimes they treat you well, sometimes they don't. The biggest thing we've learned is to get everything in writing and to make sure you don't take quotes. You take final bills before, you know, you take an invoice before you take a quote. So, because Vegas, they'll love to hand you a quote for $50,000 for AV, and then they'll put a one in front of it when they hand you the bill. So,
right, I can only imagine. Talk to me about pivoting out of the conference itself, but just to the industry in general. What excites you these days? What are you seeing? Because you get the front row seat to just about everything.
Well, there's such variety across the entire marketing spectrum, from content marketing to SEO to social media. And just every time you think we're done, every time you think everything's matured, there's nothing new. Along comes a TikTok, along comes Clubhouse, along comes something new. So we continue to have these new things pop up that people never thought about. Some of it's as a result of quarantine. Some of it is just evolution, but I keep getting excited about all this new stuff coming around. And I think we're in for some changes from the search engines here in the next 5 years.
What do you think the biggest changes will be?
I don't know, but the government's going to have an influence on them. You know, this antitrust stuff isn't going to go away.
Well, and it's so funny. I was speaking at a legal conference a few years ago, and there were a bunch of judges in the audience. They start like heckling me during the Q&A, which was very uncomfortable. And they're like, why don't you sue them? How can they, you know, they were hearing about what Google Ads were and the fact that we really live and die by the organic results. And they're like, why are you allowing this? I'm like, dude, I'm just speaking here. Like, I'm not taking on Google. You want to take on Google, that's your business, but like, it's their game, I'm playing in their sandbox.
Exactly.
And all of a sudden, and you see this very often, all of a sudden it started to catch fire, and then COVID hit, so it sort of, I think, didn't get the legs, but the states are starting to take interest in the fact that, like, this, you know, and so whether or not, you know, you think that there'll be some demonopolization, the irony is, coming from the legal space, we just talked about at the last PubCon, the LSAs are taking up more real estate, not less.
Right.
We just saw a two-pack being displayed in some results. I don't think it's stuck, but a lot of people were seeing two-packs out there, which means that, like, each of these things are like limiting the non-paid version of Google. Right. And you're sitting there and, like, you know, there's got to be a counterbalance at some point, but what it looks like or when it happens is anybody's guess.
Yep. And aside from the, we call them zero click searches increasing, look at what happened down in Australia. I was stunned that Google decided to pay Australian news publishers for content. That, you know, in Western society, that's the first time they did something in France, but it wasn't published. We don't know exactly what they did, what agreement they came up with. It was not public record. But down in Australia, that's public record. They're now buying content, you know. Murdoch, they went in, Murdoch bent him over and said, we're gonna charge you for this. And I was stunned that Google bellied up, and so did, you know, after Facebook actually banned them. And now they're talking about doing the same thing in the States. So I think this is a remarkable, radical departure for Google.
One of the things that I've always loved, and most of my time has been spent at the Vegas event, has been the fact that, you talked about this before, that people, their fundamentals, and some of those haven't changed. Like, good links are still good links. Great content is still great content. And that there are bright, shiny objects that have come and gone.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a few of the current bright, shiny objects, not that people don't make a buck on them. I'm sure there are people that can have case studies on making money on Clubhouse. And there, I know some niche players that are making money with TikTok. But those things, you know, you're already hearing about a Twitter version of Clubhouse and, you know, everybody else is trying to replicate TikTok. The question is, you know, one of those things, as you're putting these things on, how do you sort of allocate resources and your thoughts on, you know, bright, shiny objects while they're sexy and they may be a great name for, you know, for tracks and panels. Aren't necessarily, if you want to be there year after year, if you spend too much of your time following bright, shiny objects, there's downsides to that. So talk to me a little bit about the balancing of tried and true versus what might be the next big thing.
You know, Matt Cutts told me about a decade ago, he said, you can never have too many links panels at PubCon. And so we always have one links track just in honor of Matt Cutts. And you know, the sessions are always packed. They're always full. It doesn't matter. We can have 20 link sessions. They'll be packed. Every one of them will be packed.
Quote one of our good friends, Guy of the show, you know, a friend of the show, you know, man, links. I mean, it's like, it's links. It's a huge, huge freaking deal. So I do and that's why when you go there, you know, I'm always like, as I'm planning a day, I'm like, okay, well, I need to get my fill of this. Hey, this one doesn't apply to me as much. Okay. So I can go to something else, but it's one of those that has got to be a determinative, you know, it gets you on a plane out there to check it out. What do you think about sort of, you know, we've now seen both in the workplace going virtual for many people, as well as conferences, you know, there's definitely the desire and the X factor we talked about earlier of people getting together. But from a content perspective, not, you know, for the corporate people that come out and don't go to the bars at night and are going to learn and take notes and come home and show their boss that stuff, you know, do you see a world where conferences, with the genie out of the bottle, are we going to see a two track where, whether it's live or the stuff being sold afterwards, that is there now a secondary market that didn't exist before? Or do you think it's going to bastardize the in-person? How do you think it's going to play out?
Yeah, there's definitely a secondary market there. And I think we will see more hybrid events like that. You know, I'm part of every meeting planners association there is in North America. And pretty much everybody is talking about the fact that these virtual conferences, number one, they're not profitable at all. Nobody's making money on these virtual conferences. Even the big ones that have 3,000-4,000 attendees at them just are complete failures. It's almost impossible to find any conference planner that's holding virtual events that says that their events are profitable right now. So I don't think we're going to see a big shift towards that. We have seen a big shift towards education. You know, education online, clearly it's taken off and people are much more comfortable learning remote when it's purely educational. But conferences, they just haven't been a huge success, regardless of all these new platforms, everything from StreamYard to Hopin. In fact, Hopin just bought StreamYard.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, yeah. So it's just not functional the way people think it's functional, the way attendees think it's functional. And everybody says, oh, it's a great conference. But do they go attend? No, they don't. You know, you have an event and you have 2,000 people signed up. Most of these are running about 50% attendance. 50% of the people showing up, paid attendees showing up 50% on the virtual. It's just not happening. But this idea of, you know, hybrid, that's got legs. That's got legs. Being able to do both has got legs for people, I think. So,
well, I mean, I think that part of it is, I mean, look, there are three factors, right? There's the socialization, networking, serendipity, right? You can't, that has to be in person. On the flip side, when you really want to, you know, be able to skip, how many times you've been at a thing and the preview, you watch the decks. I wish I'm a very impatient ADHD guy. I wish I had a TiVo remote to be able to say, okay, I don't need to know about your kids and family. Get me to the good stuff. You know, and so the beauty of the digital stuff, if it's not live, is you can get to that. But that middle piece is the ADHD at home. You know, I got family in the next room. We got a new puppy running around. Like, it is so hard to sit and focus, so that while it may not be nearly as efficient, and the fact that you don't have those distractions or minimized through a phone is a pretty significant piece that, you know, is not there when you're, so anyway, that's the the reason to get on a plane is that it gets you out of your work mindset with that.
Opens you up to the possibilities. So.
Very cool. Well, look, Brad, I really appreciate you taking the time, thrilled to have been a part of your last event, excited to hear about Florida, and my fingers are crossed that sooner than later, Vegas. That's the question I get most, is when is Vegas coming back? And I said I would ask you about it today, and the answer is when Vegas tells you they're ready, it sounds like.
Yeah, they just opened back up about a month ago, in middle of March they opened up. And they got to give all these big shows, all the SEMAs, the car show. It's got 150,000 attendees. They've got to give all these big shows first bite of the apple. And right now, the big shows are like, do we go? Don't we go? Do we do it? Don't we do it? What's happening with this and that? They're just not sure yet. So as soon as they take a date, we get the leftovers. Yeah,
that's my prediction. My prediction is somebody is not going to pull the trigger at the last minute. And they're going to need to fill like a right. Jenga puzzle. They're going to have to fill the that space. And my prediction is, assuming that we see it, that you're going to, it may be like the old days where you have 3 months to plan.
Well, the big problem is the international travel. Most of these big shows have a huge international attendance. And right now, international travel is so tricky that they're just scared to death. To pull the trigger.
Right. It's one thing to say domestically, maybe you could pull it off, but you just don't know where things are going to be. But this has been tremendous. Thank you so much. We'll put the links for registrations in the comments so that people are there. And, keep up the great work. We appreciate what you have done for the industry, and can't wait to see you in person.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being part of it.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.